Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
We got the lovely, super talented, wonderful Maddie Anholt. But we also have Doc Brown on the line. Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey. It's good to chat to you, mate.
Oh, I've got... And you?
What have you got?
What's going on?
Crabs.
Oh, no, I was just going to say...
5 pounds, I just found.
You can hear yourself, like, on the...
Echo.
Some kind of infinite loop, but it's gone now.
Oh, what a shame.
I can just hear you. Yeah, oh, or maybe I'm losing my mind. I don't know.
Today is officially 1 year to the dot that... You, me, and Sarah all started here on FUBAR.
That's incredible, man. It's been such an amazing, eventful year wherein I've very rarely been on the show that I started a year ago at all. And it's almost poetic that on the annual anniversary that I'm also not here.
I know.
So, yeah, nice.
Yeah, I think... Out of the 6 months or something that we did it, I think we probably did about 8 shows together, didn't we? All 3 of us.
Yeah, what are you going to do, you know? We're people in demand.
Where are you? Where are you away? Where are you? Tell us. What's going
Why
on?
Are you? Why are you?
Why are you, Doc?
Yeah, I'm just in between. I'm just in between this shoot. So I'm shooting this thing in London. I have to go and do like ridiculous tasks for Greg Davis, try and please him. As kind of like some kind of overlord situation.
Nice. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I tell you what, we've got a very, very good friend of the show joining us right now. Our main man, Pete from Pimlico. Hello, mate.
Hey, guys. Yeah, how's it going? Yeah, how's it going, blood?
Oh, you're a legend. So word on the grapevine is you're going to be doing Rap About Anything on some Australian tip. Is that right?
That's right, celebrating because it's Australasian Day.
Yes, yes it is. All right, well, we've got apparently Better the Devil You Know by Kylie Minogue. It's going to be
right,
instrumental.
I can't wait.
All right, you're a legend. Then don't go anywhere because we've got a surprise for you after this as well. Pete?
Yeah.
All right.
Like a surprise.
All right, my legend.
God, man.
All right, my friend.
Yeah. It's getting into the groove, isn't it?
Yeah, do it, buddy.
Australia Day, isn't it? Better the devil you know than the devil you don't know. Criminals and strange animals, that's Australia. It's like Austria, but the word's a bit longer. Austria aliens. The animals all got pouches. The criminals hit people on the head and they got ouches. Australia, it produced Wolf Harris, who was a cock. It's also got a big massive hard rock. It's called Ayers, named after Pam. But the Aborigines called it something different and deny it's made of spam. They got PlayStation, Xbox or Wii. But they got a stick that when they throw it, it comes back to the original Aborigine. Australians, they all got didgeridoos. They stand on their head to poo. Australians, they got spiders that jump out of the bog and bite your asshole. Australians, any successful ones flee. Like Kylie, Guy Pearce, Hugh Joseph E, and Rod Hull. An emu E. I ain't never been there cause it's too far. And anyway, there's loads of them serving in me local bar. I've seen sons and daughters, young doctors, cell block H and neighbour. Be careful enough, Australia, ask you a favour. Australians, are they animals or are they criminals? I don't know, so I call them criminals. Not criminals.
Oh, Pete, that was fucking epic, mate. That was absolutely epic.
Yes, Dad.
Oh,
holy shit, the back of my head's hurting now.
Yeah. Goosebumps, man.
Pete, we got a bit of a surprise for you. We've got a special guest has been listening to critique your rap. Doc Brown.
Yeah. What's going on, man? You got competition in it, bud?
I'm good. To be honest, I'm retired now, so I just think like...
He's lucky, innit?
You know, I think you brought a lot to the table. I mean, it's more spoken word than...
I couldn't get into the Kylie. I was enjoying the Kylie too much to actually follow the rhythm of it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, that would be my biggest critique, really. The backing track is kind of irrelevant because you just...
That's the beauty of it, innit? With the Coolio Bambaataa. The backing track don't really matter, innit?
Nah, it's like poetry, man. Like poetry. I think my favourite thing about your performance from start to finish, even before rapping, was slightly nervous laughter you seem to be able to emanate from Maddie there, which is
entertaining. Yeah, she's nervous, isn't it? She's right to be nervous.
Well, hey, Doc.
Yo.
Do you want to know why there's nervous laughter
you're
coming from Maddie?
You're an idiot, Hume. Do not, man.
Come on, please. Please.
Fill me in.
Okay. I won't go into too much detail, but you and Maddie have met before at Latitude Festival years and years ago, maybe.
Yes, lad.
Yeah. So, and Maddie, she was like, ooh, he's kind of cute, isn't he? She had a little crush on you back then.
You can't blame her, can it? He's a nice piece, isn't
it? He's definitely put together well. Whoever was behind
Doc,
that.
I'm not a homewrecker, man, I'm stepping away.
Yeah.
Very kind. How are you, man, Doc Brown? What's going on?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's always good to tune in each week and hear you. I'm glad that you become a regular part of the show. You've been on the show more than me. That's the craziest part.
That's right. I'm on the show more than you.
We have to put your name in it.
Yeah.
Needs my name in it, blood. Needs it.
Does.
Which one? Puglia Bambara or Pete and Pimlico, isn't it?
PSP, man. PSP. It rolls off the tongue.
And it kind of sounds a bit like PCP as well. That's another thing you take.
Yeah,
so kind of
dangerous stuff.
Hey, stay away from that. We love you, mate.
We do.
Thanks, lads. Thanks. Thanks. It's great to be a part of the great success. You know what I mean? That is all going all over the universe. You know, with everyone. You know, so it's great to be part of it as a family. It's a full about family, blood, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
There you go.
Thank you, Pete.
Nice to talk to you, Pete. It was an honour.
We work on it, blood.
Yeah.
It was an honour, Pete.
With another girl. See you soon.
See you, legend. Thanks so much, mate. There he goes. Doc. So, I wasn't trying to make you and Maddie be uncomfortable about that. I just thought it was a funny story. She said it was a long time ago, and it was. But
no,
it's over now. She's really upset at me.
Damn,
no.
It's just what I do. It's what I do.
No, I'm happy.
Yeah, good.
All right, listen. Any attention is good attention these days.
All right, Doc. Happy anniversary.
Cheers, bro.
Happy 1 year birthday.
Happy anniversary, my love. Take it easy.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
So Doc Brown's here. Doc Brown, guys, let's introduce the voice you're hearing.
Yeah. Woo, guys.
Doc Brown, yeah.
I'm having some much needed respite. It was kind of a couple of years there of not really resting at all, I guess, because, you know, when opportunities come your way in our business and you know how that period of time that your candle might burn, you know, I've been going for it. Yeah, I got off like the press junket for Ricky Gervais's film.
And did you guys tour? Where did you tour?
We just did everywhere, but we didn't have to travel everywhere. So a lot of people came to London.
So you didn't get to go to Japan or anything?
No. We dealt with all the press, but most people came to Soho Hotel.
See, I think we're losing out, Doc, because, you know, Arnold Ochin.
Yes.
You know, he did The Good Lie. And he toured the world. I don't know why we can't tour the world. Like, he's in Japan, places where they don't even have black people, and Arnold was there.
That's very true. If you speak to most actors, they would tell you that that's the real sort of graft of the job that they don't necessarily look forward to, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, these days you're contracted to that the same way you're contracted to act in the flipping film.
I've got three kids. I look forward to it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I know that. I know that and I hear that. The one thing I learned from it, because it's the first time I've ever done it, is that if the film is good, that job is a hell of a lot easier. Because there were some days where I wasn't even sure if I was saying the same thing twice to the same interviewer, because you were doing like 10, 15 in a row.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, imagine if the film was shit.
Mm.
Like, that must be so hard.
School,
and that must happen every day to actors.
The listeners, like, so when Doc just said we do 10 to 15 interviews in a row, we're talking about literally, because people don't know this, we literally sit in a room and people come in back to back.
Yeah.
Back to back.
The biggest break you'll get is when someone will go, do you want any more water?
So, or if you need to go to the toilet.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't even have time for that.
And here's the interesting thing. Most of these people come in and they go, you've probably heard this all day. I've got a really original question, though. And they ask the same damn questions that we've been asked all day long. Am I lying?
That's very, very true. And I think anytime someone just comes out of left field with a question, they get the best interview. And it really makes me laugh listening to interviews or pre-records with other actors, other artists. And then when it comes back to the studio live, the host will say something along the lines of, oh yeah, I think he was a bit jet lagged. He wasn't very responsive. And I'm thinking, I'm sat there listening at home thinking, yeah, but your questions were so boring. You've been hearing the same shit all day.
I'm just breaking my chair.
No,
I'm
just trashing.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to get the best out of an artist, then engage them. There's a film show on, I don't know, to plug other film shows, but there's a film show on 5 Live, Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode.
I quite like them, though.
And I take, well, they're big fans of you, man.
I love them,
they're
actually
big fans
Mark
of you.
Mark Kermode is my G.
I mean, he bigs you up regular. When Simon's away, I take his place. The last time I was on it, I interviewed Ben Kingsley. So I was part of that junket, the other side. And I could see what the other interviewers are doing. And I just thought, I'm just like, because the BBC was saying, this is what you should say, this is what you shouldn't say. And I was like, you know what? Let me do it my way. Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know the guy, but I feel like I can engage him.
Yeah, and you did.
So number one, I'm not going to call him Sir Ben. I'm just going to chat to him. And they're like, ooh, I don't know. And I was like,
did
listen.
You go, yo, Benny?
Benny.
B.
hey, yo, B. Saying? BK.
You know what? I was just, obviously, I bigged up his movie. I'd seen it. So I thought, yeah, you know what? It's actually, it's a decent movie. So I don't have to lie. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So I bigged up the movie, got him on side. I did a bit of research on him. I didn't realise he was of mixed parentage,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yes.
So I said, you know what? Like, I've found, like, as an actor, having a mixture of cultures in my family has informed me on, like, it's given me, I don't want to say a universal voice, but it's made me, open me up from a young age to very different experiences, which I think has informed my skills as an actor. What do you think about that, coming from a biracial background? Yeah. You should have seen his eyes lit up.
Yeah.
His eyes just lit up and he was fully engaged. And then from that point on in the interview, I swear down, he goes, the thing about you and I, Ben, the thing about people like us is we are social chameleons. The thing about you and I, people like me, people like you.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, bro, no one's getting this interview today.
Of course not. Of course
nobody.
Not.
I'm very proud of it. But, you know, it just goes to show.
Yeah.
One small thing that's just sort of off, just out of left field, you're going
to
engage
it. Joanna does that, and we often try to educate our young listeners, or not young, but our listeners, that a lot of them want to get into the business.
Yeah.
If you ever become someone who's interviewing talent, always look for a different angle. Don't just go in with the same questions. Try and, you know, like Doc just said there, he found a way to engage Ben Kingsley and probably got the best interview out of everyone. And I think it's not just a cynical thing of just trying to get the best interview. That should be standard practice anyway. It's about just trying to be interested and understand that these people could have had 20 or 30 people in that.
And also think genuinely about a conversation that you would be interested in.
Yeah.
Like if you think about when you see your mates, you're not going to ask them the same stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're going to want a fresh, interesting conversation every time you see your mates. So
hey,
think
Bill,
about it like
how
that.
How was that packet of crisps, Bill? Well, John just asked me that. Well, I'm asking you again, just
answer. I find hiding alcohol in my underwear, that always is a nice icebreaker for my interviews.
Yeah.
I don't have any right
fact.
Now.
She says.
Here we go, whiskey.
Are we talking like airplane miniatures here?
Yeah, it's kind of like been my little thing when I do junkets. If I'm interviewing celebrities, I'll like whip out just to break the ice. Yeah, just do something completely wacky.
That
and it works.
Yeah.
She's got that down. You've been doing pretty well with that, actually.
Yeah, I've been doing a couple. Or do like Freudian slips or things like that. So
okay.
It's been quite fun.
Because
yeah.
They're always like, Did she just
wake him up a bit?
Or
wake him up.
Yeah.
Or people, they think I look quite, you know, nice and innocent, and then I'll just, like, I went in, my first ever interview was with Marlon Wayans for 50 Shades of Black.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I went in and was like, hello, and I thought he was, like, great, another, you know, interview. And I was like, so 50 Shades of Grey was good. Is Black better? And then he looked at it, and then went, I see where we're going. And then, like, our interview just went off on another level. We've had a lot of emails coming in being like, oh my gosh, Noel and Doc together, this has been my dream.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
It's amazing. Can you guys work together? Amazing.
Martha in Labrador Grove. Yeah, Martha.
We're just going to take a second.
What kind of dream, Martha? What kind of dream? That's what I want to know.
I bet you want to know.
Good
this
shout.
Is Cards Against Humanity. It's one of the best, like, pub games or anything. It's a game of wit. I'm just going to test your wit and see how funny you are, because you guys both write comedy, so let's see who's funniest.
I don't write comedy.
That's not how I describe Noel Clark, but yeah.
I don't write comedy. So it's white cards and black cards. I'm going to go first round. So normally the person who plays the black cards is the first person who pooped that day, but we're going to forget that and I'm going to just...
Poop?
It's the actual rules of the game.
I don't play good shit, you know.
And then what what am I supposed
to
do?
So the point is, for example, I will read a black card, which is normally a statement, and on the white cards, you have got funny answers.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to read out a statement. We'll do a mock one, which is in the new Disney Channel original movie, Hannah Montana struggles with blank for the first time. And you guys have got to look through your cards, find what you think is the funniest filler.
Okay. So
you
I can
hand
look
it to
at
me.
All of these.
Yeah, I read it out, and then whoever I think wins the funniest answer.
I can look at these. Oh,
I didn't realize I could look
at
all
of them. Yeah, you
can
look.
Okay, great.
I'll pull out another black card.
I've laid out mine. I've got 10 here.
Yeah, I'm laying them out now.
This is the first one. Ready?
Yes.
So instead of coal, Santa now gives the bad children. Blank.
I'd go for horse meat. Oh, I give it to you, do
yeah,
I?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There you go.
And then hand me yours. Instead of coal, Santa now gives the bad children horse meat. Or instead of coal, Santa now gives the children a middle-aged man on roller skates.
That's easily that
okay.
way.
Okay. No, you win that worst round.
I thought I might with that one.
Okay. What's there a ton of in heaven?
I'm liking this game.
I'm gonna go for
it's
that
so
one.
Funny. Okay, so what's there a ton of in heaven? Authentic Mexican cuisine.
What's there hard to come by.
What's there a ton of in heaven? An erection that lasts for longer than 4 hours.
That's even harder to come by.
I think the erection is going to win that round.
I think you've got that one.
You got a round each. Well done. Well
okay,
done.
Okay, awesome.
What helps Obama unwind? Yeah, I'm not looking what it is.
This is kind of more political than it is funny. But
okay. What helps Obama unwind? Sexy pillow fights.
Okay, okay.
What helps Obama unwind? Not giving a shit about the third world.
Political, see?
Okay, no. No one wins that one.
It is
with
easier.
A low blow.
It is easier.
What gets better with age?
Oh, man, this is disgusting.
Is it? I'm laughing already. I don't even know what it is. Okay.
My one is technically true, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mine is 100% not true, and anyone who agrees with it needs to see a doctor.
What gets better with age? Child beauty pageants.
That's class.
That's dark, no?
And, it's dark, but class.
What gets better with age? Concealing a boner.
It does.
They're both true.
It's not true. It's not like the old days where you get up halfway through your lesson in class and it's just there.
Bro, I used to be able to hang a wet beach towel on my shit and now it just drops to the ground. Like,
I know, I feel age. It. I know the, yeah.
I bet you do.
Seriously. What would grandma find disturbing yet oddly charming? Goblins.
Goblins.
Yeah.
What would grandma find disturbing yet oddly charming? The clitoris.
Yeah, I bet grandma's never found that shit.
Depends when she was born, I think.
If she's born before 1970, she's
yeah, if she's one of those hood grannies from now where she's like 37.
Oh, yeah, she knows what
she knows about it.
When I first played this game, I played it with my younger brother, and we all played it, and he got that, and he went, what's the clitoris?
This is a problem. How old is your brother?
He was about 17 at the time.
This is a problem, you see. You young boys don't know where the details are.
The goods are.
Mm. Yeah.
You gotta
That's
research
why
that.
An old man like me can take your girl.
I can't say that I knew when I was 17.
Of course you did. Come on, doctor.
I can't say that I knew.
I don't know.
Yeah, man, I knew. My mum was a nurse. I'd be reading them anatomy books when she's at work.
Nice. I had a book in my house that was called The Breast, but there was nothing about the clitoris in there. It was very scientific.
Now, my mum, as soon as she's, I'm going to work, darling. All right, mum, bam, anatomy book.
Yeah, no, I was the same with the breast. That's exactly
That's
the
quite
same.
A shame that all you had was a little scientific.
No, I also had the Littlewoods catalogue.
Okay,
yes,
fine,
I had the next catalogue.
Yeah.
The underwear section.
Boom, yeah. Oh my gosh. There used to be this girl in there, and she had these pubes, and you could see them through her pants and everything. And I used to go nuts, man.
Such an innocent time when you think about
it.
You know what I mean?
It was so innocent.
The Littlewoods catalogue.
Yeah.
Early masturbation.
Yeah.
Doc Brown, no Clark.
Yeah.
Tune in next week.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
We have a very special guest with us right now, Mr. Nathan Caton.
Nathan Caton.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Now, the last time I saw you, we were both doing, was it a John Bishop show or was it?
No, Apollo.
Live at the Apollo.
Apollo. Yeah.
Live at the
that
Apollo.
That was a year ago already.
Is that a year ago?
Yeah.
Scary.
Really?
I know, man.
Holy shit. I need to write some new
jokes.
I've
done nothing that year. Or FIFA, that's all.
Just been cool.
So, yeah, you know, that, and that's kind of like a, I guess for UK comics, that's like a big sort of step,
yeah.
Isn't it? Like you kind of do that, then you can start getting a few more bums on seats. That goes on YouTube. Kids see you. They buy tickets to come see your shows. How have you found it since getting on live at the Apollo? Has it?
Oh,
has
man,
it, has it been
my,
a big change?
My phone's been ringing nonstop, man. No, it hasn't. I don't know. At first, I thought, I can't really notice any difference. Mm. I was going to gigs, doing my gigs as normal. But then I think in Edinburgh, I noticed it more. Because
yeah,
people come
a bit more savvy.
And they're like, oh, yeah, they're I saw not, you on live at the Apollo, so I thought I'd come and see your show now.
Nice.
So that's when I noticed the difference.
So what was that like, your first kind of main TV appearance, type stand-up
I've
appearance.
Done... No, I did Mock the Week a few times, and I did Russell Howard's Good News. That got me a lot of exposure.
Yeah, that's got such a young following, Russell Howard's Good News, that for all of us that go on it, it's like a huge spike suddenly.
Yeah, yeah.
In your career, you get more bookings, you get more interest, you get more TV offers as well. It's just one of those...
Yeah, but it's weird, though, because before
shows.
That, I was doing a lot of Radio 4. So, like, if I did, like, a solo show, I'll get, like, a Radio 4 audience, and then after the Russell Howard News... or young audience came to my show as well.
Yeah.
So it was like a weird kind of blend at my gigs.
But you're fusing the audiences together.
Like young students with pensioners sitting together going, you have an Nathan?
That's probably good for you, though, actually, because, I mean, the last full-length show I saw of yours in Edinburgh, and it must have been like 3 years ago, it was very much around the different generations of your family, like, I mean, the subject matter.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So it probably helps to have like a varying age of fan.
Yeah. So you get people inside of different people, like young people going, oh yeah, I get your brother, and then old people going, oh, I hate your brother.
There
but
you
like
go. Because I had to whittle my fans down a little bit because, you know, like I got like a huge number of fans just from YouTube who were watching the raps. And they're look at this young guy rapping. They thought I was about 15 years younger than I actually am. And then when they come to the full length show and it's just like, it's a bit more kind of philosophical and there's a lot more chat and a lot less rap. The kids are like, oh, no, I'm going back. I'm going back to YouTube. I'm going to watch YouTube while he's on. This is boring.
Well, who are your favourite artists then? Like, what kind of hip-hop do you listen to? Or rap music?
Okay, my favourite artist, like, in general is Ludacris.
Move, bitch!
When they're like, older people going, what's she talking about? Ludacris is just, he's always like, I find him really, really funny.
Yeah.
And I like that. Like, I like conscious rappers, but then also, if you're not going to be conscious, like, instead of just talking about the whole, like, you know, like, I got bling, I got money, do something else. And Ludacris, he's that
kind
of...
He's entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I would also say, Ludacris, I know he's world famous and stuff, but I still think he's underrated as a rapper.
Definitely.
Because if you listen to a song like Saturday, like, he breaks down, like, each 16 into four separate four-bar sections that each have their own unique flow, and then he mirrors it on each of the 316 bar verses. I mean, it's scientific.
That was very technical
rap
for the average listener.
Yeah, it's quite true. Basically, he does, I break it down, there's 16 bars, you know, 16 couplets in a verse, and each one of those verses, he changes the flow completely four times.
No,
but he does
super
exactly the same flow on each of the three verses.
He's
basically
super accomplished
mirrors
rapper,
it.
And I think he's one of these people that...
Him and Outkast. Listen, so you're from... You're from the West, proper West,
Middlesex West.
West, out there West. You're into rap, you're obviously comedian. So People Just Do Nothing couldn't have passed you by, right?
Oh, yeah, see, what, they film it like...
You're a Brentford fan
well,
aren't you? And they're all Brentford boys.
Yeah, well, they film it in Brentford.
They film it in Brentford.
Yeah.
But I know, like, DJ Steves is a Brentford fan.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, because I actually went to watch Brentford with DJ Steves.
Not this season.
No, it was pre-season last season when they played Palace. It was my team.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You might as well be speaking Japanese right now. I'm like, huh? What?
But yeah, I do remember thinking at one point that day, like, Brentford, rap, comedy. Yeah. Like, Nathan must love this show. Like, so you seen it, presumably?
I've only seen one episode.
One episode?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I've not even seen a whole episode.
Involved. I mean, the show's it's classic.
My mates told me about it, my brother told me about it, but I don't get around to watching a lot of TV because, like, I'm always gigging
obviously
and stuff.
Always out at night,
and like,
yeah,
when I come back I just want to sleep or eat.
Yeah, true.
I don't really watch
true
a lot of TV
that. There's still not a lot of room on TV for black comics, you know. Javon Prince has just had his show on, was that BBC Two or
BBC
Three? BBC Two, you know, which is that's a big deal, you know. Like, a lot of time you'd think that would be relegated to maybe just online content at the BBC, so I'm quite glad they took a punt on that. They took a punt on Stephen K. Amos a few years ago. That didn't really work out. But, you know, there's loads of black comics on the circuit. And then there's the black circuit, too.
Yeah. Okay.
You know? But, yeah, the amount of crossover into the mainstream is still pretty low, you know? I'd say, like, in the wave that me and Nathan came up in, there was only a couple of others at that time as well that you would see more in the mainstream on the circuit and possibly on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like Marlon Davies.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. It's like there's no honour amongst thieves. You know, like, comedians as a whole, like, no one really gives a proper shit about each other. You know, because it's crabs in a bucket.
Thanks,
everyone's
man
after the same.
Yeah, just so you know, Nathan, you're welcome here and everything, but don't get too comfortable.
Everybody's after the same pound.
You.
No, I'm talking like in general. Like,
no,
everyone's after the same pound.
Comedians are standing together,
there's
but
no
outside
union,
of that,
you know, there's no union. Like, we get screwed all the time, right, by promoters and whatnot. But also, we get screwed by each other because I could get offered a gig, and the money is disgusting. I'm not taking that, you know. And, like, how dare you even offer me if, like, I've got to pay more for the hotel and the travel and my food and all of that?
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? And then they're just like, okay, fine. And then they
promoters
just find a kid who wants to do it. Like, he'll do it. So it goes to the kid, and he's not going to go, oh, wait a minute, Doc Brown turned this down because it's a ridiculous deal. It doesn't reflect goods and services or your labour.
But they're at a different stage in their career and things like that, so they're hungry for the
opening. If there was a union, they would be able to be found gigs that reflected their ability as well. Do you know what I mean? And we'll never have that because, like I say,
because people are hungry to feed themselves, isn't it? So it's like you're not going to get that camaraderie. How did you get your start, though, in the professional comedian?
Gosh, what? 19 years old, just done my first year at uni, and I wanted something to do during the summer other than like get a part-time job. So the comedy had always kind of appealed to me a bit because I did like drama at college and I was always given the comedy roles. So I saw an ad in Time Out magazine for an open mic in Old Street. I think the venue's closed down now, refurbished, because it was a mess when I went there. And I did like 10 minute open spot, and I died. Like,
that's brilliant, though.
We died in my hole.
That's got to be the best start, though, because you're like, oh shit, I really need to pull myself up.
Yeah, so once I came on stage, I was like, okay, it can't get any worse than this. Like, I think surely it can only get better. But it was a crap gig because there was about 12 people there. Half of them were the other comedians. There were some men playing pool in a stage behind us. There was no curtain.
Okay.
I mean, they were just playing pool, and every now and again they'll look up and kind of shake their head and carry on playing pool.
Point their ass at you.
And and then I went on stage and I had some awful material about like being a young guy in a club trying to pull a girl. And I was the youngest one there. Everyone else was like 30 plus, whatever. And they just didn't get it. No, it's like, what are you talking about? So I just came off stage and I was like,
where is like in the crowd when you're feeling the pain for that person? It's like, oh man, please just pull it back.
Yeah, I know.
Bring it back.
People look at me like, just come off stage, man. What's wrong with you, boy? I came off stage and I was like, okay, I felt comfortable being on stage, even though my material was rubbish. I felt comfortable on stage. And then I went back like to another club a week later and it went better. I was like, okay, I'm kind of getting the gist of like what I need to do. Like, obviously don't use that same material that I used the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then from there I just kept on like doing open spots until like I started getting paid. And I remember the first time I got paid, like 20 quid, and I thought I'd made it.
KFC on me.
You know what I'm saying? Mum, bills are taken care of.
Yeah. For the next 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing though. And what an accomplishment to be like doing it on a professional level.
Oh yeah, I'm glad now. Like, I see my mates waking up at like 7 in the morning. You know, going to the office. I'm like, yeah, I wake up at 7, go and pee, I come back and go to sleep again. Yeah, it's cool.
Meditate on some jokes.
You know what I'm saying?
But then how do you, like, I've always been curious, like, how comedians generate material, like, because it might just be something where, what, you're walking down the street and you see something that gives you an idea that then you extrapolate into comedy.
Comedy is everywhere, man. Like family and friends, things that happen to you, things in the news. Like, at the moment, I get a lot of stuff I see in the news, and then they'll kind of like spark off things that happen to me. Like, oh yeah, like there's a routine I got about taking a girl to Chicken Cottage for a first date. That stemmed from an article I saw in the paper about
that's real life, man, right there.
Yeah, well,
see, comedy's
at the
in
time,
real life.
I was 20 something, but that came just from a story I saw in the paper about a guy who was accused of being sexist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was thinking about, okay, well, how can men be chivalrous? And I was thinking about things that I've done that aren't chivalrous. And then that was a whole story about taking a girl to Chicken Cottage.
Yeah, which I'm sure lots of girls would actually be quite impressed with that.
She wasn't, because she was vegetarian, which I didn't find out.
Yeah, that's difficult. That there's not many options for you if you're veggie. Religious, that game. Apple pie for dinner? Sorted. So we still have Doc's rap coming up. I don't know, Doc, have you chosen your subject?
I have,
yet?
I've chosen it. Alistair at Alconcalcia on Twitter says, how about George Osborne revealing he's a hip-hop fan? A sort of Osborne tribute. Rap about anything.
And this is definitely the best instrumental for it. As a tribute to... Yeah. Where my headphones at? Turn my headphones off!
I'll take yours.
Oh.
All right, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ready, yeah?
With that gangster shit.
Yeah! Here we go.
Osborne,
straight out of Oxford. Crazy motherfucker named Osborne. Why he rolling with the motherfucking snobs for? When he really wanna hang with the brothers. Hitting blunts and 40 ounces, cussing mothers. He was there in 92 at Brixton. In the crowd like, ooh, I love this one. And now he's in control of the budget. And when it comes to hip-hop, he's like, fuck it. But suddenly it seems like he needs us. So he started talking greasy to please us. Yeah, like he was really into Ice Cube. George, that don't mean we're ever gonna like you.
Like you.
You can use the sunglasses emoji. Chancellor of the Exchequer, fam, you don't know me.
Know
you're
me.
The Tories' number one wigger. And when you rap along, you probably shout...
You probably shout...
Shout out George Osborne, number 11, down the street. For all your poo in envelopes.
Yeah.
You know the address.
And all your fake stories are going to gangster rap shows back in the day when we know you weren't up in them shows.
And shout out everybody for getting in touch at foobarradio.com. We love you. Big shout out to Nathan, Caton for coming through.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, it's been fun, man. Cheers.
Good man, good man.
Thanks, Nathan.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
We are joined right now by the one and only Mr. Farrow Manch. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. What's going on?
Welcome. Great to have you, man.
Good to be here, bro.
Mm. Whereabouts are you right now?
I'm in Queens, New York, at home, in a snowstorm, in a
blizzard.
Yeah,
it's frozen
like,
out there,
stuck
right?
Stuck in the crib, yeah.
I'm a very old fan of yours, and when I was a teenager listening to Organized Confusion, when I see your videos and your photos in The Source and whatnot, there was a lot more Farrow Munch to go around in those days.
Yeah, man. Definitely. And that's a beautiful thing, too, because the size lent to the weight and the voice and the heaviness of those vocals. And I relish those moments when Farrow was like 250, like gargantuan.
You still have buzz. I'll tell you, to get nerdy for a minute. I was about 15 years old, 1994, and somebody, I think it was a friend of mine in the apartment across the road, he played me a song called Stray Bullet. When you got into your verse, I mean, it was a sign of things to come. Obviously, the tongue-twisting style and having such an incredible flow, but the one thing a lot of rappers never seem to marry up is the incredible flow, the incredible technical skill with something that means something, you know, and that verse to this day, you know, whenever I think of the rat-a-tat-tat, I always wondered, was that in relation to something that you'd seen, something you'd been told, or just generally what was going down in Queens at the time?
Yeah, Organized Confusion was definitely a culmination of two art students who had a very visual and graphic mentality on how they wanted to express their lyrics, blend in with just growing up in the hood and unfortunately, seeing people get shot, you know, I remember these scenes and stories vividly. And so Stray Bullet was like, you know, really a true story, but vividly told and cinematically told.
And so futuristic for me as well. I mean, there's still mainstream rappers today who haven't quite spoken as explicitly as that on a record. They're still struggling to find their voice and say what the hell they mean, you know, and you were doing it 20 years ago. It's incredible.
Oh, thank you, man. You know, I think it's cats out there that are putting it down. I think the underground is even more underground than, obviously, than when I was coming up, you know, because that stuff was more in the forefront. Like,
yeah,
we were on
is it fair to
deals.
Say, you know, like a Jizza or someone like that, someone who was really doing their thing, a major label like Geffen in 94, wouldn't even get a sniff of a major record deal in 2015?
Well, exactly. And that's what we see happening right now. And I hate to say it, I should be glad to say it, in a way it's good because it pushes a lot of artists to find their voice. If they're trying to find their voice, for the ones that are out there and know what it takes to be classic, what comes from that is some real classic gems. What's sad is the multitude of the stuff that is on the surface is not as good as what was on the surface back then, in my opinion.
But at the same time, it's like the raucous era, that was kind of like a pivotal time in hip-hop. It was almost like a transitional time. But the Simon Says records, like, to me, that was quite an underground record initially. Yeah. And it was just so ill to see how that broke through to such a widespread. I've got to admit, my mum has Simon Says as her ringtone on her phone. So, but yeah, I mean, how was that for you, though, like breaking through to
worldwide
such mainstream
hit.
Recognition? You know, that's an anthem.
It was crazy. You know, it was my first solo album. Just understanding I had got a lot of offers from labels at the time, but I wanted to go in the lab and really find my voice as a solo artist as well before I signed a deal and played music for people and let them know where I would be going. I was testing out the dopest MCs in New York, and a lot of people in my clique was telling me about a lot of the raucous artists and Talib and Mos. And I went to see Talib and Mos at the bookstore in Brooklyn, got a relationship with Quali, and was telling him, you know, a couple of labels were courting me, he put me on the Raucous. I met with those guys, played them some of my demos, you know, because I wanted them to hear what I was doing solo. And they were in love with it. They were ready to sign me straight off the bat. And I told them that in terms of what was going on in the music industry at the time, that I could give them two or three things that would cut through, because I kind of understood the temperament of where the music was, somewhere in between the Raucous and the Bad Boy era, and I felt like I could make something that would kind of fit my style but kind of cut through, and that would be Simon Says. Yeah, they knew what it was as soon as they heard it. As I was making the beat, I kind of knew what it was because, you know, it's a deep question because at the time in New York City, we had a couple of clubs that was breaking hip-hop, in which New York doesn't have anymore, which is why you're seeing a shift in the sound. One of the reasons why you're seeing a shift in the sound. We had the Tunnel, and the record was kind of geared to make people actually turn up, which is a term that's used now in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to get people out on the floor and get people moshing and get people pumping their fists and excited, which is why the song has that big intro.
Yes.
And they were breaking records in New York at the time. We don't have a place to break records like that anymore.
Mm. I remember seeing you at the Jazz Cafe a good few years ago now. What really struck me was I think you came with like maybe one singer or two singers.
And
it was just like a real simple setup, but it was so soulful. It was heartfelt. And I just feel like you've always... I don't feel like you've ever felt the need to go the way the current wave of rap in whatever particular year is going. I've never felt that you felt that pressure. Is that fair to say? Or is it scary for you to keep pushing the envelope like that?
It's kind of natural, man. It's like we've been that way since the beginning. And I think that's because I'm an artist in a true sense. Not that making records, but that's how I see things. So, and plus culturally, it's like, how do you add on to the music if you're copying and just constantly following trends? So as an MC from that era, my mindset is just like, all right, how could you add on to that or push the envelope? I've been there to the UK so much that each time I'm like, ah, shit, what am I going to do now? You know what I'm saying? So last time we added the live element and we're going to do something different. Just kind of keep it interesting for the people who keep coming back and supporting to spice it up a bit.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
Jason Mazza, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, man. It's exciting to be here.
I got to say, my favourite role that I've ever seen you in a low-budget film called Shifty with Riz Ahmed and Danny... Was it Danny Mays?
Danny Mays.
Which is a wicked film. For anyone who hasn't seen it, listeners, and you two included, it's a brilliant little thriller. Very underrated.
Yeah, that was a blessing, that one.
Jason pops up. I had no idea he was in it. I was watching it. He pops up about halfway through playing this kid called Malik, and he is wired. Like, he just jumps in a van, and he starts talking like he's on speed, like a mile a minute for, like, 3 minutes. It's a hilarious performance. Really, really funny, edgy and strange. Yeah, just another reason to watch his work, really. So what's going on at the minute? What are you working on right now?
Well, you know, both sort of involved in Paul Whitehouse's Nurse.
And that's true. Yeah, that is true.
That was sweet. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Paul Whitehouse.
It's kind of an honour, really, to be in something with him.
Yeah, and basically he plays 85% of the characters, so there's only a couple of us that come in and do. So it was a bit of when I got the phone call, that was a bit of an honour and stuff. And he's basically brilliant, and he's a genius. Yeah, and watching him at the read-through just literally go from character to character, it's a bit embarrassing, really. He's sort of like, I've got a lot of work to do. But yeah, so that was fantastic.
Is that the one that you guys were on together?
We weren't in the same scene, and like they were very standalone scenes. And like Jason says, it was hard to get a role because Paul played everybody. You basically had to be either younger than him or black.
Yeah, so we did that, and then I've got a movie out called Legacy, which is like a party movie. It's basically like, I don't know if you've seen the movie Project X. They did this crazy party. It was an American movie.
Yes.
But it's sort of like a British version of that. And
there was a lot of pools in the trailer. I remember that. There was a lot of jumping into pools.
Yeah. This is a sort of a British version.
The pool needs to be heated.
And, you know, in Project X, I remember the trailer, they throw this sort of murk into the pool. Yeah, we couldn't afford to do that. But it's a lot of fun, though. I've seen the movie. It's really, really good.
Is there any type of roles that you would like to do or like to take on that you haven't had the chance to just yet?
I mean, for me, it's all about characters and finding that, you know, like you mentioned Shifty, that was just an amazingly funny, well-written character that I could come in and just do something with. So for me, it's all about characters, really. And I love comedy, and I sort of love to be in stuff that, you know, you watch the news and it's quite depressing. So I think if I can be in entertainment that make people laugh and feel good, that's my big remit at the minute. Yeah. So at the minute, I'm just like, the search and stuff that I'm looking to do is comedy-based, and just because I want to make people smile, make them laugh. Yeah. So, yeah. Like anything, you have to be aware that you need to constantly improve. I'm always, like, you know, trying to be critical of the previous work, and you sort of want to take what you did and better it. So that's always, I think, setting yourself goals and making sure you know you've definitely not cracked it. So keeping that hunger, keeping that fire going. So I think that's probably the key thing that I take in. I just want to be better. I just want to just improve the craft.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
All right, let's time to jump into Rap About Anything now. We've had heaps of suggestions come through at FUBAR Radio.
Thank you
tweets,
to everybody. Thank
Brown,
you to Alison Fraser, who never really elaborated on the twattering. Thanks to El Diego for the Ronnie Pickering video, which was very funny. Riz Ahmed, we already shouted out. Thanks to everybody who's tweeted me. I'm just scrolling through here. Oh, Amber Smith, thank you. Oliver Smith, thank you to all the Smiths who've been emailing in. There's not many of us. And I've actually decided to go with one that came through on the email, which was from Meg in Peckham, who says, whatever happened to guinea pigs? It's all cats and dogs now.
Yeah. Guinea pigs are so 80s.
Well, they're so 80s. And that really struck a chord with me, because I did briefly have a guinea pig, but
it's that half-hearted
pet. It suddenly had babies when I bought it. It was pregnant.
You're like, get out of here,
and
you're
the babies
disgrace.
Were really cute, and we were happy about that, and then it ate all the babies, and then it died from eating its own babies. And I was like, this is fucked. This is fucked.
No,
not fun
like,
for kids.
That's like David Attenborough in your living
horrendous.
Room. That's incredible.
It was horrific. So Meg in Peckham, this one's for you.
Bang, Doc Brown, Rap About Anything, live in the studios.
There we go. Yeah.
Ooh. That hardcore rap shit about guinea pigs, son.
Yeah, guinea pigs, son.
What?
Here we go.
Tell them.
Yo, hey yo, give me any one of your beats, I'm gonna wreck 'em and rap about anything for Megan Peckham. She's got a little bone to pick with the animals that pick bones, like the dogs in your homes. She's also got a problem with cats and goldfish and all the kind of typical pets we go pick from the pet shop. But there's one we've forgotten a little bit. Whatever happened to the household guinea pig? Meg's right, he's gone out of fashion. It used to be a minor issue. Nah, it's tragic. They were so big in the 80s. You and the little guy in a photo like, say cheese. But something turned sour, now we all forsake him. Maybe it was kind of gross the way his mother ate him. Maybe it's the fact that they weren't really pigs, or that we'd never known what the fuck a guinea pig is. Is it a rodent or what? It's so fluffy, eating his own shit and shit, so scuzzy. Hard to think of a guy with a worse life, having heart attacks on fireworks night. I think I know why they fell out with the public, Meg. It's probably because guinea pigs are rubbish. Bun it. Done it.
Pow, so what you gotta say, guinea pigs?
Yeah.
Doc Brown says you're rubbish.
Controversial, yeah.
What you got?
So guinea pigs, yeah, if you wanna get back, you
they
wanna
need
get
to
at
fire
me.
Shots
yeah.
back,
let me see if you can email. Can you email though? No, yeah.
Hit up an MC on Twitter, yeah.
Amazing.
Shots been fired at guinea pigs.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
You've got Jimmy and Harry from Ghostwriters in studio right now.
Welcome.
Lads.
What's good, man?
How
thanks for having us.
So, yeah, you guys are being talked about all over radio. Charlie Sloss been playing you. Ras Kwame's been championing you. Hugh Stevens, Radio 1, Mr. Jam. So, it's fair to say you're on the rise. You got your deal all sorted out with True Force, well-respected label. Yeah. Yeah. What was the first single that dropped, and what kind of response have you been getting on road from that?
Well, the first track we did, we actually put out ourselves, and it was a track called Back It Up. And we did that ourselves, so we were kind of like just going to radio and trying to see if we could get it played and trying to just
how
see what
hard
the
was
vibe
that?
Was. You know what? It was easier than I thought it was
really?
Going to be. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think what it is like we're trying to do something different, and I think sometimes it can work both ways, but when it works for you, you know what I'm saying? Like people gravitate towards it because it's something fresh.
And when you say different, I mean, what we're talking about here, for those that don't know, you got a kind of, I don't know how I would describe it listening to it, but there's definitely that thing, you know, that what American rappers have never ever been able to do, like try and combine the Caribbean influence, because there's not really a Caribbean influence that exists for black Americans, you know. They've been
black Americans for a fuck of a long time.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Whereas with us, yeah, most of us at least got one parent who's either directly from Africa or the Caribbean, so that, you know, those links are right there.
Yeah.
And I sense a lot of that in your music. Is that like a conscious thing, or is it just how the music comes out because of the influences that are around you?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, because, I mean, from a writing perspective, you know, I've always written hip-hop and I've always written bashment tunes and reggae tunes as well,
right.
So I've always kind of been in the middle. From Harry's perspective as well, you know, he's always produced hip hop and he's always produced reggae music as well, so it's like, I think it's always been there, it's always kind of been there, but prior to like maybe the past 2 or 3 years, you kind of slip through the crack, because you're either hip hop or you're reggae, and some DJs don't want to play this, some DJs don't want to play that, but the world has changed, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of people are just into good music, regardless of the genre, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The kids as well, they don't give a shit about.
No, they don't care, man. I mean,
they don't want to say, like, I'm strictly this or I'm strictly that.
Exactly.
They don't want to pigeonhole themselves, which makes them kind of, in a weird way, more mature listeners, I think, than any generation that's gone before. And we can definitely milk that as artists, I think. So you got, I mean, it's a no-brainer, I suppose, that you've got a collaboration with the Don Dada, the godfather of this kind of area in Rodney P. How did that hookup come about?
Again, that was just love, man. I mean, I'd kind of done a lot of shows and had been sort of supporting Roots Maneuver previously, and we'd always met each other on the circuit and just never had the opportunity to work together, you know what I'm saying? And then, like, when we got through to working with True Thoughts, they had already signed an album for him.
Right.
So it was kind of like, well, you know, we're working with Rodney P. I was like, well, look, if you're working with him, then there's no problem here. I'm sure we can get something done. He came down, he had a listen to a couple of tunes, and it was all love. And you know what I'm saying? He just come in and just blessed it. And, man, it was a bit surreal, I'm not going to lie. To be in the studio with that guy after listening to him for so long, it was just kind of surreal. But it was blessed.
I mean,
still, it's
hard to put anybody in the same bracket as Rodney when you think of, like, London Posse. Like, that record was in my house 25 years ago, so it's kind of this was a bit weird to ever even meet him, let alone work with him. I can't say I'm not jealous.
And he ain't changed, man. He ain't changed. Nah, like,
and he ain't really aged.
No, like,
it's because hip hop keeps you young.
Is that what it is?
Yes, it's scientific fact now. what are the challenges though? Like, because like you're saying, you fuse a lot of different sounds. Like, there must be challenges that come with that, innit?
I tell you what kind of happened with us is, When we first started writing songs, we were kind of writing it in that kind of traditional hip hop with the reggae elements on top. And then we kind of kept working for about 6 to 7 months. And then we had this like eureka moment that the Back It Up tune was that, where we said, you know what, we want to do more fast kind of bashment style music, because we know that everybody listens to that and everybody dances to that in the club.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? You go to a club that you might see some people dancing to trap, you might see some people dancing to grime, but when the bashment comes on, everyone's dancing. And it was like, you know what, it's a no-brainer for us. Let's try and move into that element. And we did that. We kept writing songs in that kind of vein. And then Raz Kwame heard it and was like, yo, you know what, I'm going to call that Future Dancehall.
Future Dancehall.
Were you getting anything like sort of tested out in the clubs? You were like, you know, were you sort of making stuff and like kicking it to DJs to play in the clubs and test out?
Yeah, like we were working with, you know, various pluggers who were sort of had their mailing lists, you know what I'm saying? And like we sent the Back It Up tune out to quite a few DJs, and all of the DJs were playing it. Like, even if they didn't know who we were, they'd give it a shot. They'd give it like a one shot, like they might play it once on their radio show.
Oh, so I mean, like, you know, in clubs, like, actually, if you're saying,
you know what I'm saying? Like, so we were getting a lot of love kind of across the board, which was nice, man. So, and then that just encouraged us to make more music like that.
Tell you what, it is nearly that time on the show though when we ask you guys listening what has been making you sad.
Are you taking the piss?
All right, you can tweet us at Foobar Radio. We're going to be getting into that very shortly. Lads, Harry, Jimmy, what's been making you this week say?
Are you taking the piss?
And Doc has gone for a poo.
If I had to take a shit, I would have missed the rest of the show. I don't rush.
Oh, you want to
rush number two?
No, you don't.
Ever.
You don't. Ever. No, it's what's bad.
Don't overstrain. Don't rush. Take your time.
No.
Read if you have to.
Yep. The whole sports let section it, of the
let,
mirror.
And yeah, man. Let it come out all in good time.
We digress.
Hey, that's the nickname of the show. We digress.
It's true.
All right. We want to kick it off. We're not going to kick it off with Harry, because Harry from Ghost Riders decided not to talk, which is kind of...
Harry's taking the piss, to be honest.
Yeah.
Harry just said to me, he's like, I ain't got nothing. Are you taking the piss? Are you English or what?
Jimmy, you want to kick it off, mate?
Yeah, well, just saying, on the way up here, we had to go up the Old Kent Road, and we came across like two or three taxi drivers in Priuses. I'm scared to death. I'm scared to death of taxi drivers in Priuses, whether I'm driving or in a passenger seat, because these dudes indicate left and then they swerve to the right like it's some kind of party game. I don't know, maybe they've got some dice in there or something.
Oh, they're training.
You know, like, I don't know, man, but oh man, it's always crazy, man. So, right. Yeah. Taxi drivers in Priuses, I'm sorry I had to do it to you.
Are you taking the piss?
Doc Brown, you had anything this week?
Are you taking the piss?
You've been in the Midlands, mate. I'm Scotland. Highlands in Scotland.
If I'd spend the week in the Midlands, I'd have endless stories. Beautiful in the Highlands.
All right, well, let's go to our lovely listeners. The show is all about them, after all.
A few things.
It wasn't Highland Games already, was it?
Yeah, it was Highland Games, and I thought of you. I thought you bumped into Sarah there once.
That was so abstract.
It's random.
The Highland Games.
And like in the middle of nowhere.
Whenever I leave London, and a lot of people of colour will do this, you go on and you play an internal game with yourself, which I call Blackwatch, where you just like, it doesn't really involve anything. You just go to a random town and you see a black person, you go, there's one.
I did it in Ibiza.
There's one.
Oh, wow.
No, but like,
there's some places you go where you just don't expect to see any, and the Highland Games is one of them. And I saw one.
What the wrong?
And I told my wife's uncle, who lives up there, about the game. And he goes, look, there's one. There's one. He goes, you probably know her. And I was like, fuck, I do know her. Ultimate stereotype. One other black person in the village.
Double
I know
take.
Her.
Double take. But then one's also when the person is out of vocal reach, so then you just do like the yes. Like the kind of nod,
damn.
Like,
I
spot you.
Yeah.
Respect. We're in this together.
This week, Trev in Birmingham says, I'm sure you've had this one before, right? But went to the toilet at a train station last week, 30p to take a piss, and I had no change. I can't take a piss, right? I couldn't take a piss, but London Midland are taking a piss.
So he didn't actually take the piss.
Oh, at the station. He didn't take the piss. He wanted to take the piss.
But the thing is, if it's the turnstile, you know, you pull it towards you. Instead of pushing
you
it away
sound
from
experienced.
But I'm never paying to take a piss. That is never going to happen in my life.
No.
You pull the turnstile slightly towards you, and then you slip into the gap, and then you just, as it rolls back, you slip
What's
out of the gap that you
Trev,
created.
Take notes. Oh, Trev so in Birmingham.
The only people that should be paying for pisses are people that have weird fetishes. Yeah. That is absolutely. Otherwise, no.
Where did Trev piss? I guess we'll never know. Trev, if you're still listening, let us know where you eventually pissed.
Definitely not going
to
sleep.
Went to a wedding. At the wedding, where I was told I wasn't allowed to drink on the dance floor in case I damaged the disco lights, which were underneath. Don't fucking put them there then! You taking a piss?
Are you taking a piss?
Absolutely.
I quite like the lights under the floor. You know, you kind of pretend you're Michael Jackson and then.
Yeah. For one night, yeah. No, it's fun, but fair enough. Kate just wanted to let loose, man.
Yeah. I hate being told what to do with my drink wherever I am. You know, like at the Highland Games. In fact, this was taking the piss. Now I think about it, it was a small.
I knew you'd get there. It just bubbles with you, Doc Brand. So, just bubbles until it bursts. What the best.
So my missus and my youngest, we hit the field. I say, look, I'll get us two beers. Mm. Me and the missus, not the youngest, right? And you two stay here. I'll go with the older one, right? So I'm with the 10-year-old. We walked over to this sort of bar bit in the field, and it's changed since you were there. They've got this separate bar bit now. And I go in to get the business. Oh, you can't bring any underage, you can't bring anyone under 18. And so I say to my daughter, all right, you wait here by this sort of chain link fence. I'll go and get two pints and be right out. Mm. So I go in, get the two pints, go to walk out. Oh, what do you think the security say? Oh, you can't take your drinks out, mate. You just saw me come up with my daughter. Why didn't you give me this information at that point?
Yeah. They're conspiring against you.
Now what?
I
got
drinking.
Down two pints.
Yes.
With my child.
But isn't that what everyone's doing at Highland Games anyway?
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.
Well, oh my God, like, no, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
Love my jingle, man. I feel really flattered by that. Great. It's exactly the right level of camp that I was hoping for.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. But yeah, this week, I wanted to throw the question out there. I'm sure some of you would be familiar with this story. Well, basically, a gauntlet was laid down by world-famous grump Noel Gallagher, who was reacting to the fact that Ginger Mop, Hobbity,
guitarist, singer, soul man, Ed Sheeran.
Oh, the Ginger Ninja.
The Ginger Ninja.
Sneaky, Ed.
Will be playing one of the biggest gigs of his life, headlining Wembley. And Gallagher, out of nowhere, speaking to NME, came out and said, I don't want to live in a world. I don't want to live in a world where Ed Sheeran is headlining Wembley, which for me, a little bit like the Jay-Z thing at Glastonbury, it's just uncalled for. Like, your career is doing its
He's
thing.
He's just chilling.
Do you
like,
know what I mean? Like, this other dude's doing his thing. Your music doesn't really battle each other. And he's just come out and gone for it. This is the type of man he is, whether you feel like he's right or wrong. I'm not a particularly Ed Sheeran fan. But the way that Ed responded was to basically offer Noel Gallagher tickets to come and see him.
Oh, right. Yeah. I was going to say, so, tickets for Virgin Atlantica. Good. Piss off to the moon. We don't want you here, mate. No one wants you here.
He wants him there. And I just thought it was a real kind of, you know, it was a hand of peace.
Yes,
where he could have given him, you know, a very different hand. He could have slapped him down quite happily.
Yeah.
And everybody would have said, you know what, justified. I guess my question is, if someone's going to air you out like that, if someone's just going to, no provocation, you know, just air you out in front of a crowd, you know, whether it's in the playground, whether it's in your workplace, are you going to offer the hand of peace and try and dead it like that? Or are you going to take on your God-given right and get back at this dude? Is Ed Sheeran right or wrong?
I'm a bit of a manly man, and I'm sure you are too, Sarah. With me on the... Whoa.
Listen,
look,
Ryan,
if someone wants to do that to me, I'm going to go straight up to them. I'm going to look them right in their eye. And then probably cower because I'm not very, not very well built. What can I say? I am in the right places.
Where do you stand on that? I mean, you support Noel in that? I mean, you a Sheeran fan?
Look, I guess like to some extent, sure, I'm a fan of both of their music to some extent. But I think like rinsing someone out like that publicly, especially when they haven't done anything to all their, like, I think if you're hating on someone else's success, I think it shows you straight away where they're coming from. He's bitter and he's cranky and he does things like doesn't turn up for child
he's
support
so
meetings so we can go to the pub.
Oh, no,
so
wasn't that his brother, though?
Oh, his brother, they're both as crap as each other.
Anyway.
See, I see him out publicly. Oh, no.
He is ridiculously successful. I just don't really get it.
But that's probably where it comes from, why he feels he's this voice of authority. He's earned the right to be the voice of authority because of his level of success, like, 20 years ago or something. In life, I like to go for the kill them with kindness technique because normally that annoys people even more.
So you think maybe there's something
barbed? But when it comes to Ed Sheeran, no.
Do you think there's something barbed in Ed saying, you know, come to the show?
Come and
hate me from a distance.
I won't hear your heckles behind 80,000 people.
Ed Sheeran seems pretty good like that, though. Like, he seems like he just takes it.
He's well trained.
I've been saying, getting some crap for something he was doing, I can't remember, probably being Ginger. Sorry, Ginger. But, you know, like, and he was just like, hey, I am who I am. You either hate me or you like me. It doesn't bother me. I'm just doing my thing, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, I did find it really funny that Noel Gallagher just out of nowhere was like, hey guys, I'm back.
Yeah, I mean,
shut up.
Especially when there is, I mean, like I say, I'm not a huge Sheeran fan, but there's a lot worse music out there that is assaulting the eardrums every day that he doesn't pipe
maybe
up about.
Secretly,
like Oasis.
He's loving Ed Sheeran and he can't deal
like
with
Oasis.
It.
Like Oasis. That's a really good example.
Like those three chords that they've played for about 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
If ain't broke, don't fix it.
And as I've iterated, you know, Sheeran, not my cup of tea, but I'm not going to come out in an interview. I know a lot of people are asking me to comment on this all over the world, but I've turned them all down, Hugh, because I don't want to comment on a fellow equally successful artist's career.
Yeah.
Whereas Gallagher just thinks it's open season.
Well, look, Doc, it's easy for you. You've done 4 days at Wembley, sold out every single one, so it's fair enough.
High road.
He is the, you know, he's the universal nice guy. You know, Ed Sheeran, he seems like a bit of a sweetheart. It's a pretty nice guy. So he obviously responds by giving him tickets. I think that's funny. What would you guys do in that situation if someone, just say you were Ed Sheeran and that's how Noel Gallagher flagged you off? What would you do?
I'd just turn up at Noel Gallagher's house. I'd be like, what? No. I'd be like, and what? Could have said that to my face, though. Yeah. No, I'm definitely down for the kill them with kindness.
Oh,
I'd be really snide. I'd have, like, coded, similar to Rap Wars, I'd have a very coded messages.
You'd release a diss track. That's what I want to hear, a diss track.
Yeah, I've been having a good one for a while, haven't
we? What do you think? When somebody disses you publicly, now that we're talking publicly, this could be at work in front of other co-workers. This could be
at school, at college.
That's even
could be
more
at the
harsh.
Bar. Could be any, you know, anything like that. What do you do? We've got James from Homerton on the line. G'day, James.
Hi, how's it going?
Doing very well. So what would you do in this situation? What would you do? You've got someone slagged you off publicly. Do you front on them like Sarah? Or do you take the less aggressive approach like me, like myself and Doc, and send them tickets to our concert?
there's a good way and a bad way to deal with it. Like, when Roy Keane heard another footballer was slagging him off, he turned up at his house and, like, knocked on the door and was going to beat him up.
Oh, you're aligning
not...
me with Roy Keane now. No. Yeah.
Similar beards. Whereas, you know, handling Noel Gallagher's comments with... by sending him tickets. That's funny, it gets him good press, and it shows he's got a sense of humour. If you can confront someone, you can do it without being aggressive. You don't need to be horrible and, like, get in their face. You can, you know, be a bit funny, show that you can rise above it and just kind of deal with the issue, and that definitely makes a much more sense.
Could you do, like, both? Could you give him a present, nicely wrapped present that's filled with shit?
Or a horse's head.
Yeah, you know.
The Stay Home Special with Doc Brown on FUBAR Radio.